Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Hearts.
Hey, Dark Hearts. I was waiting for you to start it, and I was like, that was better.
You know, guys. We're getting there. We're doing this thing.
Yeah, we are. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for joining us yet again. I'm now at the point where I'm like, we're ahead of the game.
I'm like, what week is this? Whose story is this?
I know. What day is it? So it's fun, and I'm kind of one of those things, like, as we're getting started. Oh, hey, look, there's Char. Is that Char or that Remy?
It's one of them, because someone just rang my doorbell. So.
Oh, fun.
Oh, I'll just mute myself while you talk for a minute. Thanks.
All right. Well, you know, first of all, we just wanted to say congratulations to our friend Amber at the Grim Mystics. She welcomed a little girl. They're calling her Ravioli as a little nickname. You know, she doesn't want to put her name out there. So congratulations from us. You know, we're so excited for you.
Yeah, she is darling.
She is. So congratulations. She put out a little they put out a little bonus episode when this airs. It'll have been a week ago announcing this. So we just wanted to say, hey, congrats. We love you ladies. And you know, there we are.
Welcome to the mom side of life.
Yeah. You know, any questions? We're here for you.
Yeah. We don't have any of the answers, but no,
we can commiserate with you.
Yeah.
You know,
you know, as long as my kid is fed and lived through the day, I think that is a win on most days, especially summer days right now.
Oh, it's summer.
There's no routine, nothing. We eat dinner at whenever we're hungry. You know what? If it's 9 p.m., so be it. And everyone that is judging me right now, mind your business.
See, we're old people and we eat so early. I already fed my kids. It's 11:18 a.m. when we're recording this, and I've already fed my kids lunch. And my daughter's constantly saying she's hungry. She's like Rolly from 101 Dalmatians. It's always like, Mom, I'm hungry. But Mom, I'm hungry. That is my daughter.
Well, mine would snack all day long, so I get it. I have to, like, force her to sit down and have a meal. No, we're not having a snack, and it's not snack. No.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yep.
Sometimes we do it. We ate dinner at, like, 4:30 the other night because we really didn't have lunch. We had, like, a late breakfast. So it's just kind of, like, whatever goes here. So we're good.
Yep.
Oh, hey.
Did you hear that little giggle? Someone's,
sure did. Hey, girl.
Someone's trying to sneak in.
Someone wants a snack? Is that what I'm hearing? No.
No. Whenever she sees my microphone now, she wants to talk in it. And that's the other joys. That's where I can't wait for some time when we have school in session. And then we can record with no children here.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Now I got two of them trying to come at me. Oh, she pushed her brother out and was like, no, you can't come in. But
mine,
she's
just
out
screamed
now too.
That she's going down to the neighbors. I'm like, remember when I said, hey, I'm recording? Like, don't. Okay. But mine is gone for the time being. So let's just count our blessings.
So let's just,
I love her,
right,
but.
In. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I'm let's just get this
ready for school to start.
Yep.
All right.
You know, it's actually sneaking up, so it's fine.
It is.
Less than a month.
And you know what? Now, as we're talking about this, probably going to have some mom guilt that we've been complaining because this is,
oh, great.
This one involves a child. So trigger warning.
Oh, gosh.
This has child abuse in it. Just letting everyone know that now. It's, you know, nothing goes towards the end. We'll go into some kind of, nothing's excessively graphic, but I just want to give that warning now. And
well,
I'm kind of gonna
now I take
tell...
back everything I said. So
listen, it's okay. Like, we can love our children and still need breaks from them, and it doesn't make us bad moms. And it just happened to be that I wasn't contemplating or like thinking about the fact that what my case is involves a child. So,
I'm gonna where are we this?
Oh,
week,
yeah,
by the way,
I should probably talk about that, huh? We're in Manitowoc.
You're getting there.
I meant to look this up and how you pronounce this. Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Okay. Sure, that sounds great to me, Cassie. Manitowoc.
I mean, it's M-A-N-I-T-O-W-O-C, Manitowoc.
Yeah, that's what I would go with.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
So it's
seems
Wisconsin.
right.
We're in that county. Technically, where the crime happened is like right outside that county, but you only hear, or it's like right outside that town, but you only hear Manitowoc or see it in all of the articles, really. So that's just where we're going to say we're at.
Okay,
I'm
that
doing
sounds
this.
fabulous.
Yeah, I'm doing this a little differently because I'm starting with the death. And then I'm going
Okay.
to kind of show how we got to this point because this is one of those cases where, honestly, if people had done things better, this shouldn't have happened. So let me just kind of dive right in, okay? On
Okay.
April 20th of 2018 at
Oh,
9:22
recent.
p.m., yeah. There's actually, we'll kind of get into it. There's still court proceedings going on with this case.
Oh.
But at Holy Family Memorial Medical Center in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, 7-year-old Ethan Hochschultz was pronounced dead. He had been brought in earlier by his legal guardians, which was actually his great uncle, Timothy Hochschultz, and his wife, Tina. She's got another maiden name, Hochschultz. I'll get back to that later, but honestly, who cares?
Okay.
So he was barely clinging to life when he was brought in. And like I said, I'm starting from the end and going back. The system that was in place to protect this child just failed horribly. And there are some aspects where, I know that there's only so much CPS could do, and their hands are tied to an extent, and I get that they're overworked and underpaid, but they're also just like any other, job where there are people who aren't diligent enough, for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm not gonna say I haven't seen if anyone within the system has been charged with anything because there have been, I think in that case in California with those the moms who had the YouTube channel with all their adopted kids and then they like, do you remember when they like drove off a cliff into the river and stuff?
Yes.
I
With a ton of
believe,
them, right?
yes, there, I think there was like
Yeah.
seven.
Yeah.
I believe some of the CPS workers have been charged with like failing to like notice things and stuff in there.
Good.
So I know that it happens sometimes, but in this case, I didn't see anything saying that this happened. I don't know if it's an ongoing investigation because, like I said, there are still things of this case that are ongoing. Before I really dive in, though, I wanted to quote or like give some of my sources. One of them that I really liked, it was a really well-written article on HTRNnews.com titled The Lonesome Death of Ethan Hochschultz, or Hochschultz, sorry, written by Doug Schneider, who's a Manitowoc Herald Times reporter. I did also listen to part of episode number 28 of a podcast titled All the Sins of Wisconsin. I won't lie, wasn't my cup of tea. And they didn't give a ton of information there that I didn't get from the article. And then the Green Bay Press Gazette.com had a few articles on the case that I read. And I did actually read a DCF 90-day summary report for child death, serious injury, or egregious. How do you say that? Oh my gosh, I can't say that word now.
You know, I
I
you
know. Okay.
struggled, and therefore it makes me feel struggle
Yep.
like I need to
Nope.
struggle with it. So
Yep,
sorry.
so an incident report, okay? So by the DCF, the CPS, so Ethan was born on September 13th of 2010. He had a twin brother and two older sisters, and he was born to Andrea Everts and Anthony Hochschultz Sr. And unfortunately, it was hard to find too much about Ethan. I mean, it's a short life, or his siblings, which, considering his siblings are all minors still,
Yeah.
that makes sense. However, the DCF report I read shows that CPS was aware of this family for several years before Ethan and his brother were even born. And I'm going to go through the report timeline of when DCF received calls, and then I will say whether they're substantiated or not. And even the ones that aren't substantiated, I just feel like showing how many times DCF got calls is so important to show, like, how did we get to this point?
You
So,
know, that reminds me, sorry to
no,
interject. It
you're
just
good.
reminds me back of the Ohio case when we talked about the Cleveland kidnappings, how many people called in things and nothing was ever really done. And it sounds
Right.
like it's a very common thing or appears to be overall, and like something needs to change because when there's, I mean, clearly these never result in good things. So,
right. Exactly. So, and then it just makes me wonder, is like, even the ones that, I don't know, there are some that are unsubstantiated. But I'm like, okay, you got phone calls about this quite a few times. Like,
maybe just like go check it out.
So, yeah. So, and then before I go in to, cause I'm going to read the timeline. So bear with me during that. I'll try to like make it kind of quick, but some of the dates mentioned the agency screened out or screened in a CPS report, and I didn't know what that meant, so I had to look it up. So if it's screened out, that means that they determined they didn't need to do any follow-up with it, so they didn't go and check it out or anything like that. But if it's screened in, that means they actually went to the home, they decided whether or not it was, you know, something that was real or not. So there are calls that they get that they're like, okay, cool, and then they're like, meh, we're not going to do anything about this, pretty much.
Okay.
So that's what screened out means.
Okay.
So here we go. Like I said, I didn't know what that was. Maybe some people do, but this way we all are aware. So on June 9th of 2007, just as the agency screened out a CPS report. So whatever call they got, they were like, no, we don't need to go check it out. And then on January 6th of 2008, they screened out a service report. I tried to look up what a service report would be. I couldn't quite figure that out. So maybe someone else who's more aware of the system knows what that means. This is the only time I saw a service report. Hmm. So then on January 24th, 2008, this is one I struggled with whether or not I wanted to mention because it's not substantiated. This is the only one like this, but it is public record now. So I am just going to say it. They screened in a CPS report alleging sexual abuse to Ethan's oldest sister by the mother. An assessment was completed an assessment was completed and the allegation was determined to be unsubstantiated and the case was closed. So I want to stress that she wasn't charged with anything. It was shown not to be a real thing. And this is the only report that I see on the report that's public information that shows any sort of sexual abuse allegations.
And what year was this? Is this all like 2018 or no? That was prior.
This is, okay. This is like, yeah, this is before Ethan's even born. Like, I just wanted to show like,
yeah,
how far. And like, some of them are close together and some of them you go 6 months or more, you know, between.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot. So that was unsubstantiated. So then they go over a year, May 22nd of 2009, they screened out a CPS report. October 14th of 2009, they screened out a CPS report. But then what's weird is on October 15th, so the next day, so on October 14th of 2009, they got a call. They're like, nope, we don't need to check on this. October 15th,
gosh,
they got a report and they did go check it out. So they got a report on allegations of abuse of an unborn child. So this would be Ethan's second oldest sister.
Okay.
And neglect to the child. So the oldest sister by her, the mother and her boyfriend. That was unsubstantiated and it was closed. But this is the first time we see instances like allegations of neglect. And we're going to see this a lot. So then May 26th of 2010, they screened out a CPS report. July 13th of 2010, they screened in a CPS report alleging neglect of the two girls by both the mother and father. Now, they said the assessment was done, claims were unsubstantiated, and the case was closed. So here we have not even a year quite. And we have another neglect. So then it goes a little bit longer and January 20th. So we did have a whole year and a half, it looks like. So January 20th of 2012, CPS screened in a report alleging physical abuse of Ethan's twin brother by an unknown maltreater. An assessment was done. That one said it was unsubstantiated and the case was closed.
How do they determine that? That's
because at that point they would have been two, and
right,
it's hard to say because a two-year-old you don't necessarily know.
That's true.
They said an assessment was done. No, okay, so this next one, I don't understand. Okay. So October 26th of 2013, CPS screened in a report alleging physical abuse of Ethan and his twin brother by their mom's BF boyfriend. I put BF. An assessment was completed, and this one was actually found to be substantiated, meaning they found it to be true. They then deemed the children unsafe, and then a consent decree was established, and the children remained in the home. Yeah.
What? So
that's what, yeah. That's what I don't understand. They were deemed unsafe, but then...
But so they still gotta stay.
Yeah. So I tried to look up to see what this meant exactly, like the whole consent decree. The only thing I really found was like a definition from Wikipedia stating that a consent decree is an agreement or settlement that resolves a dispute between two parties without admitting guilt in the case of a criminal circumstance or liability in the case of a civil case.
Interesting. So
I don't know if that meant that the children could stay as long as the boyfriend left or what.
Is the boyfriend's not the dad?
I have no idea, because there are sometimes in the reports they say father and sometimes they say boyfriend. So I don't know. Because
this guy has the boys have the same last name as him though, right? Uh-huh,
but I don't know about the daughters. I don't know if all the kids have the same dad, if they were on and off again and there were other guys between. I have no clue. Honestly, there's not a whole lot of information.
Not that it makes it any better. I mean, if you're the parent and abusing your child, that's just as bad. I mean, there's never a good situation when that's happening, so
but I really don't know what kind of like agreement could have been reached to leave children that were deemed unsafe in the home. They were deemed that it was unsafe.
So
that was, like I said, October 26th of 2013. April 8th of 2014, they screened out a CPS report. June 11th of 2014, they screened in a CPS report alleging neglect of the twin boys and both girls. This was deemed substantiated, and they were all deemed unsafe, and they were taken into temporary custody. So this is what makes me, because we have neglect again, so this makes me wonder if those other reports of neglect were true, but they were just able to cover it up.
Yeah.
You know, or...
Because you have to have some kind of, proof.
I mean, how do you prove neglect? I'm sure they have
some excuse.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm sure there's a way, like, if it's, like, extreme neglect, the house is disgusting, the kids are in gross clothes, and you come there and you find out that the kids are, you know, you go to visit and the kids are there by themselves or something, but, like, when they're young, I don't know. So,
something obvious,
Yeah, like, no idea. But at some point, I'm assuming the kids are given back to their mom, because then there are still several more reports before the kids are taken from the parents and given over to the great uncle and his wife. And then they're given legal guardianship of three of the four kids. And we're going to get into that even more so.
Okay. Yeah, because that's weird.
Oh, you have no idea. Why
only three?
Okay, that never says.
Is one like of legal age or something?
No.
They're all like young enough that...
Okay. Yeah, so at the time of Ethan's death, his oldest sister was 11. But they were taken about a year and a half to 2 years before his death. So she would have been like 9 or so.
That's little.
So she went to someone else. I don't know who she went to. It never says. It doesn't say why. But she went to a different home.
I mean, good. Like, I hope that
Which makes me wonder, though, if she had a different dad.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I bet. That would make more sense.
Right. All it ever says is she went to a different family member's home. That's all it says.
Yeah. Maybe. So. Yeah. Who knows? Okay.
I mean. No clue. So at some point, they're given back. On December 15th of 2014, they screened out a CPS report. September 16th of 2015, they screened in a CPS report of neglect of children. Unsubstantiated and the case is closed. I'm like, okay, you have someone who's already had so many reports of neglect and they had their kids just taken away for neglect. December 30th, 2015, they screened out a CPS report. And I'm just thinking, someone is clearly worried about these children enough to be calling on a fairly regular basis. Like, I think the longest we had was about a year and a half. But most of these are like 6 months or so between calls.
And it makes you wonder, if it was the same person or multiple people, like if it was that obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sad, though, because someone was looking out for them, you know, like, yes, trying to help them.
Yeah.
And clearly, so, that just sucks.
And it's only going to get worse, unfortunately. So then on February 1st of 2016, they screened in a CPS report of neglect of all four kids by their father, which was substantiated, but it didn't say anything about what was done. So I don't know if at this point, Andrea and him aren't together and, you know, he didn't have full custody. So they were just like, okay, she's taking the kids. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't say what was done.
Huh.
So then, yep. And then on March 3rd of 2016, so just a month later, screened in a CPS report of neglect by all four kids, this time by the mother. This was substantiated. The kids were deemed unsafe and taken into temporary custody and placed with the family. So this, I think, is when the oldest goes with the other family member and these three go with their great uncle. Okay. It shows on October 26, 2016, they screened out a CPS report, but if the kids aren't with her, I don't know why they would have had that unless she had some sort of visitation.
Right.
I don't know. But like I said, I'm assuming that March 3rd, 2016 is when Ethan and his twin and then his second oldest sister were placed with Timothy Hochschultz, who's their great uncle, and then his wife, Tina McKeever Hochschultz, as well as his daughter from a prior relationship, didn't say how old she was, and his adopted son, which is Tina's biological son, Damian Hochschultz.
Okay.
And he would have been about 12 or so at this time, Damian, okay, and you're going to find out why we know about a minor's name. The eldest sister, like I said, was placed with another family. I have no idea. I'm curious, but it's not like it really matters.
Yeah.
CPS placing these children with Timothy is where I find them to have not done their job properly and be part of the cause of this. Because let me tell you a little bit about Timothy Hochschultz.
I don't know. I don't want to. I'm just kidding.
Well, we all know this isn't going anywhere good.
Yeah.
So his first run-in with the law was at the age of 15 when he hit a man who was in a bar fight with his older family members with a tire iron.
Oh, gosh. 15?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. At 18, he helped acquaintances beat a man so severely that this man needed to be in intensive care for 3 days.
Whoa.
And the whole reason why he helped was because these acquaintances said this guy stole some cassette tapes from him. Yep.
Whew.
Then a year later, at 19, he pulled a knife on a female cashier at a convenience store, held it to her throat, and made her empty the register, which was like $211. But the clerk told police that he seemed to enjoy himself because he was smirking as he pulled the knife on her. And so at his sentencing for that, he apparently asked the judge for help with anger, mental issues, and alcoholism. He's even quoted as saying, "If I don't change my life, they'll always have to be afraid of me or wonder if I'll attack them or anyone else again." And the Manitowoc County DA agreed. He told the judge that the only way to protect society from this man was to put him in prison.
Yeah, so, and if he's asking for that, basically, too, like, he knows he has a problem.
At, like, 19, maybe he's 20 at this point, you know, how courts take a while to, you know. So he got 5.5 years for the robbery and another 18 months for issuing bad checks. And apparently Timothy was already a dad at this point and had another child on the way. And the judge told him he had no business fathering children. And he's like, duh. But unless the government's gonna, you know, try to control and regulate men's bodies the way they're doing to women's, can't stop that, can we?
Right.
Especially if you're not gonna let women get an abortion, then men like this impregnate them and they have to have those children.
Yeah.
Just saying. I could go off on a tangent there. That's a whole thing. I won't. So then in 1999, at the age of 29, Timothy got into an argument with another man at a family restaurant in Manitowoc, dove across the table, and held a steak knife to his throat.
Jeez!
So clearly, like, 7 years in prison did nothing to help him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he got charged with anything here, because, like, I guess they broke dishes and stuff like that there, too. Doesn't say. I'm assuming there's some sort of like fine or something at least, because there this is public you would record. Think. Yeah. And so, like, the article by Schneider states that everything was readily available at the county courthouse, including a 2009 child abuse charge that Timothy had. It stemmed from two unnamed boys. I don't know if they were his current wife's. They're, you know, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. They were aged 14 and 12. I guess they took food into the living room, and one of them was listening to music without permission. So Timothy took a 6-foot carpenter's level and hit the 14-year-old on the arm with it. And then he hit the 12-year-old in the side. He then took a 3-foot piece of wood and hit the 14-year-old about the shoulders and head, threw it at one of the boys and broke a window, and then yelled at the kids to clean up the mess. So he was charged with felony child abuse. Apparently he insisted he did nothing wrong. So that should tell you something about.
Yeah, he just thought, like, yeah, they didn't listen, so I showed them. Okay.
Yeah. But his then wife wrote to the judge before sentencing that his mental status concerned her, as well as the mind control tactics he used with the boys. So, yeah. So Timothy pled no contest to these charges, meaning he didn't deny them in any way. And a conviction would have led to 6 years in prison, meaning he wouldn't have been out to take custody of Ethan and his siblings. However, even though Judge Jerome Fox, and I'm naming him because I think he's responsible as well for agreeing to this, he found him guilty, but he didn't enter it into the records, meaning the child abuse conviction wasn't on Timothy's record. And he held off on this because of a plea deal between Timothy's lawyer and the DA, the then DA, who again I'm naming because I fault him too, Mark Roher, R-O-H-R-E-R. Don't care, because he agreed to a plea deal where if Timothy stayed out of trouble for 18 months, the judge would find him guilty of a lesser charge.
Okay, I'm sorry, but anytime there's any sort of child abuse, neglect, any kind of thing, there should never be an option for a plea deal, because that's a bunch of BS. Like,
when it's substantiated and he's like, yeah, I totally did this.
Right.
And you have the wife being like, hey, I'm concerned about him. Yes, this happened. And you see, also, let's point out, the judge and the DA can see his past convictions.
Right. It's not like this was the first time he's had gotten into any trouble.
Sort of. Yeah. He had never gotten in trouble before this.
He knows how this works.
Yeah.
And they know he has a history of violence.
The DA, also, I did look it up. A judge, at least in Wisconsin, doesn't have to agree to plea deals. It says they normally do because most judges trust prosecutors. I don't know what Mark Roher was thinking in making this deal, and I don't know what the judge, Jerome Fox, was thinking in allowing it. He could have totally been like, what the fuck? No.
Mm-hmm.
This man clearly likes to control people.
He and like, yeah, the kids weren't tiny little boys, but they're still kids, like 14-year-old boys. I don't know. No.
And it's not like he, and I'm not saying this is okay, but it wasn't just like he slapped him across the face. He took a piece of wood and a carpenter's level, which those are usually like metal things.
Yeah.
And
oh,
hit
yeah, that's
these children with them. Like I said, I'm not saying slapping is okay.
No.
But if he had no prior convictions and maybe he slapped the kids, being like, you're going to take some anger management and we're going to do this. Maybe I could kind of see that. But this is
like, you could have really, I mean, that could have done a lot of serious damage.
Yeah. So judge agrees to this. And so that's why him pleading guilty to these felony child abuse charges don't go onto his record, because they're going to hold off for 18 months to see if he gets in trouble or not.
That's
which
sick.
This man has proven that he can go a little while. It's not like he's getting in trouble every year.
Right. When he knows that he has a time frame, like, cool, I'll go this long. And then after that's up, I'll just get right back at it, you know?
Yep. So then in the summer of 2011, after not getting into trouble, he's only charged with a misdemeanor of disorderly conduct. This means that because no children were listed as victims, CPS can't use this incident as a reason not to place the children with him. So I understand that they couldn't use this specific one, But, and we'll kind of get into this in a bit, they could use all the other stuff. So I don't understand how beating a man with a tire iron at 15, pulling knives on people, how are these not red flags? Because the law does allow them to look at past convictions. They just can't look at this specific one as child abuse because no children were named. So they have to ignore that he was originally charged with felony child abuse. But they can look at all the other ones.
Right. And how... So, this bothers me.
Right. So Timothy McCarthy, who's a spokesperson for the State Department of Children and Families, stated that some convictions like sexual assault, intentional homicide, and kidnapping will bar someone from fostering, which I sure as shit would hope so.
Right. Gosh.
But lesser convictions may not, especially if the person is a family member. And I just don't get how any of his other convictions would be viewed as lesser convictions. Having some weed on you, maybe having one DUI where you weren't like way over the limit. Past it.
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay. But like, McCarthy's even quoted as saying, if you're in a county that doesn't have a lot of placement opportunities for vulnerable children, you're eventually going to have to start looking at situations where people have a criminal record. Again, sure, something like possession of weed, maybe right. one DUI that was several years ago with no children in the car. Not pulling knives on people.
Yeah, maybe not violent offenses.
Yeah.
Knife, fighting, hitting, yeah. thing. Nope.
Public intoxication? Sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
No. No. Yeah.
And so, especially the fact that this is a recent-ish case, it's like even more disturbing.
Yeah, because it's not back like this was in the 60s.
Yeah, I was like, it was more of a slap on the wrist back then, you know, mm-hmm. but now it's like, come on. That's why we have these kind of things in place, you would think. I mean, right. in order to protect society.
I mean, you know, there's also a federal guideline that the county follows called kinship care, where placement with a family member is preferred over non-relatives, but it doesn't have to be followed. Like, it's just an advisement. It's not a law. So, you know, again, I don't get it. And I don't get why the other family member couldn't take the other three kids. Like I said, I mean, maybe they didn't have the room. Maybe the oldest was, you know, yeah. there.
Went with
their,
a different
yeah.
side of a family that wasn't yep. theirs. Yeah.
But I still can't fathom where they thought Timothy was a better alternative over a non-family member.
Right. So what they don't have, like, why not foster care?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sorry, but I know there's terrible foster parents out there, but I know there are some really good ones. So,
well, okay. So this is like, we're going to get into this too. So originally when they're placed with Timothy and Tina, it is a fostering situation, but mom, Andrea, and the children's father lost custody of these kids. So, after a child is placed in a new home, monthly visits are done. But in Ethan's and his siblings' cases, the caseworkers would have only checked on them monthly from March 2016 to when Timothy and Tina became their legal guardians, at which point they're not okay. fostering. They're now legally in charge of these children.
Right.
And that was only several months after they were taken in. So I don't know exactly when they became legal guardians, but it wasn't...
And they were, like, wanted this? It sounds like... Timothy, like, hates life in everybody. So, like, I'm surprised he would be like, yes, please, let me take care of these kids.
I think I don't know. We don't get a whole lot more than what I said. But it kind of seems like Timothy likes having control of people.
That's true. Maybe he thought this is a good opportunity for me to, just control a bunch of people and act like I am such a great father figure.
Yeah, so... Now to April 18th, 2018, and the events that led to poor Ethan's death. On this day, Timothy and Tina had left the home, which this was often the case. Tina would actually spend the entire week in Green Bay attending community college, leaving her son and Timothy's daughter at the house with Timothy. And Timothy would leave really early in the morning a lot to go do his work. So... Timothy's daughter would often be the one responsible for taking care of the kids, getting them ready for school. And we'll find out that Damien was actually left to supervise the children's punishments pretty regularly. So not only are they taking these kids in, Tina knows what's going on, and we'll get more into her later. But she's just like, whatevs, I'm going to go to Green Bay and forget about all of you. And Timothy is like, cool, you guys are in charge. So on this day, April 18th, Timothy left Damien, which again was Tina's son, his adopted son, who was 14 at this time, okay, in charge of Ethan's punishment. Why was Ethan in trouble? Because he talked back to his teacher, which he's in second grade. Also, this child has clearly come from an unstable home.
He's a product of his environment. He's doing what he sees. And
who knows if he's getting any sort of like care at school, you know, like seeing the student counselor or anything like that, or if he's getting any sort of counseling.
Well, no clue. If he's used to having to defend himself like at home, maybe, I mean, you know, that's probably another just normal reaction from him, which is so sad.
Yep. So Ethan, who's just 4'8" and weighed 60 pounds, he had to carry a 44-pound tree trunk around the yard for 2 hours. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so like apparently they'd have to go a lap around the yard and then they'd get 5 seconds to rest and they'd have to like do it again. But Ethan keeps falling because this tree trunk
weighs as much as him.
Almost as much as him. It's over half his weight. And Damien is hitting him, kicking him, and whipping him with a belt as he's going around the yard too.
And does anybody see this? My gosh.
Tina and Timothy are gone. Neighbors, like, there was one thing I read where neighbors talked about how, like, oh, we sometimes saw a boy crying in the yard, but then we just saw them out there. I was like, there's no way you guys missed these kids.
Correct. For 2 hours, too.
Which, they're out in the country, and so I don't know how close their neighbors were, because they kind of show the house, like, So they kind of show the house, but one neighbor, it sounds like they were close enough that, like, they mentioned, like, leaving the house and seeing the kids outside, but then coming back home and seeing police cars there. So they had to have been, unless they're, like driving
put
by.
Put two and two together.
Yeah, I don't know. So, eventually, Damien's belt, the metal breaks off of it, so then he just starts to use a branch to whip him with.
Oh my gosh.
The other kids said Damien seemed to be particularly angry that day. And later, when talking with a detective, Damien would even admit to having a burning anger inside him and that he often punched inanimate objects. It started as early as first or second grade, and he was even almost expelled for breaking the nose of an older student. So Damien has anger issues, and he'll mention later that as soon as Ethan and his two other siblings came to live with him, he said, life got really boring and it felt like a prison because he was often, if the kids were in trouble and he had to supervise, that meant he had to be outside for as long as they had to be outside.
So it's a punishment to him too, is how he saw it.
Uh-huh.
So he's pissed at them too then. I mean, that just puts more fuel to the fire.
Exactly. So after about an hour of trying to run around this yard, which, like I said, it sounds like it was fairly large. I don't know how big. It was kind of out in the country. It's mentioned that the property was over 3,600 square feet. So I don't know if that just means the land or like including the house. I don't know.
Right.
I'll post a picture that I found of the house and you can kind of see like it looks like it's a decent sized yard. Also, again, a 40-pound or a 60-pound kid trying to carry a tree trunk that's half his weight.
Right.
So Ethan falls to the ground and doesn't want to get back up. So Damien orders him face down into a puddle, which Ethan clearly doesn't want to do, so he forces him. He removes his coat and boots, and he stood on his back. Mind you, did I say? Oh, no, I'll tell you. Okay, so here it is. I was like, Damien is twice Ethan's age, okay? Remember, Ethan's 7. Damien's 14. On top of that, he's over twice his weight as well, because at 14, Damien is 5'11 and 168 pounds.
Dang.
Yeah. And he's standing on
his
back.
He's not a little 14-year-old by any means.
No. And later the autopsy report, or in the report of, on the autopsy report, they'll note that there was a boot print on Ethan's back.
Wow.
So while standing on them, he then proceeds to bury him under snow.
Oh my gosh.
It was estimated to be 80 pounds of snow. Damien also later stated it was a little coffin of snow. And this whole time, at some point, like, Damien doesn't think anything he's doing is wrong and somehow doesn't think that it's dangerous, which I get it. You have a 14, I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah, like, I guess he has no sort of like role model situation. I mean, in a good way. Look at what he has, and
And
no
he
one's
has
ever
no anger
around.
management, you know? And so
Yeah.
Damien kept him in the snow for 20 to 30 minutes before the other kids got him to finally take him out. And at that point, Ethan was unresponsive, but Damien just thought he was trying to get out of his punishment. So he was still like kicking him and trying to slap him and get him up. And so he eventually calls Timothy and Tina and was like, "Hey, he's doing this. I think he's faking it." So when Timothy and Tina returned, they found Ethan unresponsive and they took him inside at first, but then they took him to the hospital. And Damien told detectives that Timothy had told him to say that Ethan had fallen from a tree or not to say anything. But then he was like, "Don't say anything to get anyone else, like, don't get anyone else in trouble, you know? So pretty
Yeah.
much, don't rat me out." And later, when police wanted to question Damien, Timothy told him to tell the truth, which confused Damien. So I'm assuming Timothy was like, "Tell the truth, wink, wink." I can't wait,
Yeah.
you know.
Trying to imply that he didn't do anything. Act like he didn't do
And
anything.
trying
Yeah.
to, but this kid who clearly thinks that standing on a child half his weight with him face down in a puddle isn't going to somehow drown or kill him.
Sick.
I don't know how you, yeah. So Damien told detectives that Timothy had punished him in the same way with the log and running the yard, except his log, like, he had done this recently, but his log wasn't near as heavy as Timothy's. Damien got in trouble for not memorizing 13 Bible verses. Yeah.
Okay.
So, And during Ethan's punishment, Damien was calling Timothy asking for advice. So Timothy and Tina are very much aware of what's going on.
Yeah, not like they were just shocked to hear what was going on. Okay. They were just as guilty.
Yes. So, like I said, Damien was often left in charge of making sure the kids were filling their punishments if Timothy wasn't home. So if they had to be outside for 2 hours, Damien had to be outside for 2 hours. And he said he struck Ethan around 100 times and he was annoyed that he had to be outside. So Ethan's cause of death was actually hypothermia. He also received blunt force trauma to his head, neck, and head, neck, chest, and abdomen, and his 11th rib was broken, as well as having that imprint of the boot on his back.
Gosh.
It wasn't until 10 months after Ethan's death, though, that Damien, Timothy, and Tina were all charged. So, like, because DCF had to do that whole investigation that,
Investigation. Oh,
and
yeah.
stuff. It took them a while to determine. And at first, they're saying he fell from a tree. They don't know what happened, you know? So,
Sad.
yeah, Damon was originally charged with first degree reckless homicide, 3 counts of felony file child, oh my, 3 counts of felony child abuse, and 3 counts of felony battery. His lawyer had requested that he be tried as a minor. However, because of his acts and the charges, Damien was tried as an adult. And in
Good.
June, yep, in June of 2021, at the age of 17, he pled guilty to 1 count of first-degree reckless homicide. So the other 2 charges were dropped. And he was sentenced to 20 years in prison, as well as 10 years of extended supervision following his release. So he won't get out until he's 37, and then he'll have extended supervision until he's 47.
Wow. Good.
Yeah.
That's the only, like, not only good thing, but I mean, at least there's some sort of ju I mean, in that sense, I'm glad he got charged as he did and
Yeah.
didn't just get a slap on the wrist.
Right. Tina McKeever Hochschultz was originally charged with intentionally contributing to the delinquency causing death as a party to a crime with a felony. That's all the article said, with a felony. I don't know what that means. 2 counts of child abuse and failure to prevent bodily harm. In July 2019, Tina was found incompetent to stand trial and was committed to the Department of Health Services for treatment. So then in May 2020, she was found competent. She pled not guilty to her charges. And then in March 2021, she was found guilty, and the charges had been reduced to just failure to act. The prosecution and defense both made a joint recommendation of just 2 years in prison, which I think at that point she had already spent some time, so it almost would have been time served. I don't think she would have been in jail that long, which Judge Geraldine Dietz, she was like, fuck no. I mean, she clearly didn't say it like that, but she said that wasn't sufficient. At her sentencing, the judge said, I think that the amended charges fit the circumstances. I think that this is a very clear, that this is very clear and has been established in hearing after hearing that your role in this, your culpability in this on that day was your failure to intervene, your failure to take action to prevent the most tragic of outcomes. I don't believe you're free of culpability. The judge said, I don't think that anyone is questioning that Timothy was the control in the household. He was head of household and exercised that control. But I also don't think that frees you of culpability. Because she even mentioned, she was like, you were away. You were in a whole different town. Like, there's no reason why you couldn't have said something to anyone or made a call.
Right.
Like, on that day, maybe not, but you knew this was something that was happening in that house.
This wasn't the first time that this happened.
Yep. So...
gosh.
Yeah, so she, I didn't even mark. I think she got 5 years, but I think because of time served, it'll only end up being 3. But then she was also placed on extended supervision for 5 years. And like, it talks about her like little like crying and apologizing and all this, and like, oh, I wish I had been a better person. It's like, yeah, wish you had.
Well, too late now. So
it even talks about. It even talks about the mom, Andrea, making remarks at Damien's and Tina's trials, like, you guys are monsters, yada, yada. But I'm like, if you hadn't neglected your, and I, listen, I'm trying not to judge because I don't know, like, if there was drugs, alcohol, addiction involved, I understand that's a sickness and illness, but like, if you hadn't had your children taken away from you.
Right. You're kind of like not the best person
you
either.
You have to take some responsibility for this too.
Like, they would have never been in their care had she had her shit together. Like,
there are so many. Yeah. I mean, like I said, like I'm every time I read that, I was like, I'm trying not to judge. I don't know what her situation was. I don't know how old she was. You know, was she a child having children, all these things, but I'm just like, okay, but you don't get to sit there and be like, oh, my heart is breaking, my children. I was like, you didn't even have custody of them. You didn't have regular visitation of them.
And I have zero
sympathy. You don't get to play the victim
for
now.
Anybody who neglects their children, whether it's their history, like, no, I'm sorry. No.
Yeah.
That's
so,
not okay.
As for Timothy, his trial keeps getting postponed. His lawyers have asked judges for changes of venues because they don't think he'll get a fair trial. Judge Geraldine Dietz did rule against the prosecution using the 2009 charges in his trial, which I'm kind of like, but for real? But she ruled that the incident was too far removed from the current case and with different circumstances. But I'm like, but was it? Most importantly, she said the risk the evidence would unfairly prejudice the jury against Hochschultz outweighed the possible probative value of the evidence and said it wouldn't be allowed at trial. So I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of get where she's coming from, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, but I think they can still use his other records. They just can't use like, hey, he was charged with child abuse, but then it was dropped. I think they can still be like, this dude has beat people before, you know?
Right. Regardless of age, he has a violent background in history. So.
And so prosecution also wants Damien to testify. And I think they're still trying to decide whether or not, like, they want him to testify against Timothy.
Yeah.
Which would help their case, and I think it makes sense. But I guess they're still trying to go back and forth on whether or not this is going to be allowed. So, as of right now, Timothy still doesn't seem to have a trial date. Like,
so is he currently, is he still like in
so
prison?
So I saw something, he had bond that he could post, but he couldn't afford it. And I think his bond just got reduced so he could try to post it.
Gross.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure what that looks like there. The only positive outcome of this is Ethan's Law in Wisconsin, which closes that loophole that made it so CPS couldn't consider the 2009 charge, and it makes it so other children can't be placed with known abusers.
Good.
So, I mean, that's really good, but again, it's like, okay, you guys still saw his violent background, and you were able
Correct.
To look at that, and you didn't. So, like I said, I feel like there's so much so many people failed this poor child that this death was completely preventable.
Yes.
And he was just failed so horribly. Like I said, that's why I still wanted to read all of those CPS call-ins, even the ones that weren't substantiated and stuff, because I think it just shows that there were clearly people constantly calling this in who had concerns about these children, about this family, you know. And I just found one thing with, like, the neighbors, and I don't know, it seems like Timothy's neighbors were more so of the, like, don't ask, don't tell kind of mindset, you know, which is
sick. But
and yeah. I'm like, again, I don't know how close or far they were. But that's the unfortunate and sad case of Ethan Hochschultz, who was only 7 years old. And I don't know what happened to his siblings and stuff now. I don't know if they went with another family member, if they were put into the foster care system. I don't know.
He's this cute little boy, too. I just was looking at his pictures on him.
Yeah.
And I'll post that's just so sad. Ugh.
I know. And I'll post a picture of him and stuff, and it's just, like I said, and I'll post a picture of the house, too.
Yeah.
And the only one I'm going to link to, I'll probably link to that article I mentioned by the writer, because I just think it is a very well-written article. So if anyone wants to find that a little easier and stuff. But
yeah, good call.
Yeah, that's poor Ethan.
That's very sad.
Manitowoc County, Wisconsin. So I was looking, and actually someone else had messaged us on Instagram. There was another case. I was going to do a kind of survival case. I mean, other people had died, but there was a victim that survived this case in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we'll cover. Have you ever heard of, like, the Bonebreaker Killer?
I don't think so.
I've heard several. I think I watched an episode of I Survived maybe on it, and I know on My Favorite Murder they had covered it at one point. I've heard about it a lot, and that's why I kind of held off at this time. That one is a bit more graphic, but it was a teenager who killed other younger boys, and he would, like, break their bones first and, like, torture them.
And where was this? Wisconsin?
That was in Wisconsin, too.
Huh. I'm surprised. No, because when I did a Wisconsin case, too, and I was, like, struggling to find some cases, that one never popped up, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. If you check our Instagram messages, I responded to that the other day, because I was going to cover that one, but then I was like, you could find so many articles about it. And I was like, I know this one so well. And that's, again, where I've had that issue. I'm like, do people know this story, or is it just me?
I know. I feel like that is always the case with any of the stories. So I think anytime we think that, we need to just not think that.
I know. That one, though, I know, that one, though, was also, like, fairly graphic. And I was like, okay, it's a survival story, but it's also pretty horrific.
Right.
So, and then I came across Ethan's, which I'm like, I think I maybe vaguely heard something when he first died.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember hearing much about it. And I just wanted to point out, like, how much work our system still needs, and especially kind of
for real
for those pro-lifers, like, are like, oh, there's adoption and stuff. I was like, I don't think you understand how many children are in foster care and adoption and how badly that can go. Like, that system is so overworked right now. So, and unless we can start getting the funding into, like, CPS and foster care and adoptions that need to be there, like, let's maybe not try to control women's bodies. You know,
you're good. No, you're good. No, I mean, I have all these thoughts. I'm like, I'm just going to leave politics out of it, just because I'm like, I have lots of people, family.
I know. And it's not even the politics of it, though. Like, you can be against that for yourself, but to make that choice for others, especially, like I said, if you're going to do that, then at least, like, let's put into place things that are going to help these children later on. Like, we don't have a good system there.
Yeah, the system is terrible, and it sucks, because I know a few of my friends I know who actually foster kids, and they're amazing, and I'm like, these kids are so lucky. But then you hear about these horrible situations, and it's like, it really sucks. It's like the luck of the draw, which kid goes with the amazing family and which kid goes with the one that's gonna neglect them and they just want the money. Like, it's so sad, and all of it, just all around, it's just terrible. I mean,
it is.
You would think by now things could get better, but I think even just bringing attention to cases like this is good, because I think, you know, some people don't fully understand, and like stories like this are not heard all the time. And you know, mm-hmm. that like, this is just one of many like that, I'm sure.
So many. And you know, we're hearing about this because this was a little white boy. Let's be honest. Yeah. How many children of color have similar, if not worse, situations happened to that the system failed them so poorly? And we just don't, there's not the information out there, because they don't draw news in the way, you know, and that's horrible and stuff too. So those are the things that we need to look at. We need to be trying to focus on and fixing. Yeah. So that's why I really wanted to focus on this case. I wanted to do this case, because it was like, this is, and it's 2018. Like I said, it's not like we were looking at 2000,
right,
at like 1960, 1950, you know, where in our time frame, we're like, oh, of course something like that happened then. You know, this was 2018, 2016, when these kids were placed with them, you know.
There's so many signs that, And the fact, I think, too, it's not even like it was just nobody had any idea what was going on. They knew.
Right.
They were made, and the people who called it in did all the right things. They did all they could do, you know? So, like, that really sucks, because then it falls back into the hands of the people in charge, and when they don't do anything, it makes it pretty difficult. And I think a lot of it, it's like they just, the whole the boy who cried wolf thing, and I think that's unfortunate, because the one time you don't go will be the time that the kid dies, or you know. And so it's like,
well,
yeah, and again, you shouldn't like, have that many times.
No, but again, at this point, you know, Tina and Timothy were legal guardians, so CPS now doesn't have to do those monthly check-ins, because they're legally in charge of these children. You know, as parents, it's not like we have people coming in and checking on us once a month.
Right.
So and they're not doing that there. But again, that's where I feel like CPS failed in not looking at his past violent records. Those weren't just small, lesser charges. Those were violent crimes. And Tina was aware of what was going on, and maybe she was, maybe he abused her too, I don't know, but she was like, she was away for a week at a time. And I feel like usually when a spouse or a significant other is abused like that, the other significant, the abuser's not going to usually let them spend a whole week away from them every week.
No.
She had options. She had opportunities, and she just...
And even being away gave her an excuse to go to someone for help without him knowing. So I don't understand that.
Yeah.
But
which I will say, seeing her mugshot.
Yeah, she doesn't look...
It looks like she's torticollis.
Yeah.
Yeah, neck, which for those of you who don't know, is like when your muscle, your neck muscles like spasm and pull to one side and you can't move, like her, oh, it looks painful.
She's like, her head, I was like, is she just leaning that way? Like,
yeah. No, it has to, like, I don't know if she had a neck injury at some point, but it hurt me. But I'm just like, I just get angry looking at their picture. I'm like, you guys, like,
same.
Why?
Yeah. Like, and he looks like just a very scary man.
Yeah.
Like, no thanks. I'm good.
I can't fathom it. It's one of those things, it's that, like, so as gross. I was typing, I was getting angry, and I'm just like, how did we get to this point?
It's really sad. I think that's like another lesson to learn. I mean, not learn, but anytime you see anything, call it in.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the other day, this is kind of a weird side story. It's related, but not. So I was outside talking to my neighbor, and I saw one of my other neighbors pull in, and she looked real heated. And she's a neighbor that everyone kind of knows. She's like just the bitter lady that's like mad and hates everyone and calls everything in. However, I saw her pull on her driveway. She gets out. I see her start walking down the street, and me and the other neighbor I'm talking to, we're like, what the hell is going on? You know? And then we see this, a couple, a man and a woman with two kids that are, the kids are probably like at 10 and 8. Two boys, and the angry neighbor starts walking towards them, and she's yelling, if you ever put your hands on your kid again, I will call you in. And I'm like, what the hell? So me and my neighbor are just like, kind of, you know, like the nosy neighbors paying attention. And then the parents, they're like, what did they say? They yelled, and they're like, you know, mind your own fucking business. And they're screaming at each other. The boys are walking with their heads down, and my angry neighbor, we'll just call, I don't want to give her name, obviously, but yeah. She's like running after them and she's like, boys, I am so sorry that happened to you. I am so sorry. And I'm like, what the hell? So then they walk off, and then the angry neighbor, as she's walking back, she told us when she was driving home or whatever, she passed him on the street and she said the dad had like the back of the kid's head, like holding him by his neck and like was like banging his head on the ground or something. I don't know if this was true or not, if there's more to it, but I was like, you know what, regardless of if that actually happened or not, like good on her for at least like approaching it, which I'm like, I mean, there's probably other safe ways, guys, to do it. I mean,
at that point though, she maybe would have been better off, because let's be honest.
Yeah.
Who, if this is true and they were doing that out in public, what do they do behind closed exactly. doors? Exactly.
But then I'm and like, was probably, there more to it? Like, were they, I you just don't know.
It's still,
did she exaggerate? Sorry.
But let's say what she said was true and they were doing this as a form of punishment. She would have been better off calling the police if she knew where they were, telling them so that there was a report in, because her approaching them, then the parents could then turn around and blame these children. If you hadn't done this, you wouldn't have made me do this, and this wouldn't
and
have
then
happened.
Get in more
people
trouble.
Wouldn't have been aware, and then something worse will happen inside. So honestly, at that point, you guys, like, call the cops. If you see something like that, call 911. If you suspect something, there's always like CPS numbers you can find, after hour things. Maybe I'll try to find to link, like, because I know every state's different, so I don't know if there'll be sort of like national hotline for like reporting child abuse. I'll see if I can maybe find some resources.
Yeah, that'd be good. But I mean, 911, if all else fails, I think in a pinch like that too.
Yes.
Because then it put me in a very awkward spot, because then I'm like, and so she's telling us, and I'm like, okay, part of me wants to kind of like follow them, like obviously keeping a distance, see where they go, mm-hmm. where do they live. And these boys, I mean, then I've seen them again recently walking, and it does seem very odd how the boys are walking very close together, side by side, certain distance right from mom and dad. Maybe that's just how it is. But, and I think this, you know, and like when I said, I don't know, maybe she was exaggerating this and that, I'm like, that's the problem. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you want to give people the benefit of the doubt, which sometimes, yeah. But at the same time, if something did come from that, you know, then why wouldn't you? Like, you can't just look the other way. So I think, I know that was kind of a random story in there, but
no, relevant. But I think it goes with it and relevant. That's just it. Don't assume that someone else will do it. Even if five of you call in the same thing, at least then they're like, hey, this is serious. You know, don't just assume.
More than one,
like,
person saw it.
If you're concerned, but you're like, I can't call 911. It's not a thing I know for sure. Call the Child Protective Services. Call them and they'll determine what they need to do. Because you don't know. Maybe this family already has a history. You know, they're like, hey, we've gotten other calls about this. We should go check this out. You know?
Yeah. And they clearly were aggressive back to this lady. Like, and so that was another sign. I'm like, they weren't like, oh, he's fine, he fell, this and that. Like, they were like, mind your own. It's like screaming back, and I'm like,
which sounds like someone who was clearly punishing their child in
correct
public.
Correct.
I mean, so, I was gonna say, like, it depends on the situation. I can be aggressive in public too if someone's all, but like if someone's like,
yeah,
you,
it
like,
depends,
hey, like,
well, and there's no way to approach it,
like, yeah, right. But
she should have just not done anything, because I'm like, now you also put a target on yourself. They know where you live. They watched her pull in her driveway.
That's just it. There's so many things you don't know how a person is. Like, you're better off if you're seeing it happen, call 911. If you're concerned about the safety of someone, you know, immediately call 911. Or if it's something that you think needs looked into, call CPS. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Just
that. Just trust your gut.
Yeah. Better to be safe than sorry, because I'm sure CPS does also get the, you know, I'm sure there are people who call too much and like about the dumbest things too.
Yeah.
But and still. So I'm sure they understand and they know the differences and they know what to look for and ask for.
For sure.
So cool. Okay. There's my tangent, my high horse of just call things in and we need to work on our system. So like I said, I'll link the article. Of course, I'll link all of our socials. You know, we have the Instagram, the TikTok, Facebook, Twitters.
I only know, how to use like two of those, so.
I know, I'm the one in charge of the Twitter and the TikTok.
Because I don't know.
It's fine. It's fine.
Right over my head, and nope.
It's cool. Twitter, I don't do much. I post like our weekly stuff, and occasionally, you know, we have a few followers in there. We have people who will retweet stuff, but I don't fully get Twitter. I won't lie.
I know. I've had it for a long time, but I don't know the last time I actually even opened the app, but.
Yeah. So email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com with comments, concerns, maybe not concerns. I mean, if you have some concerns, I guess, sure.
But please keep them to yourself is what she's saying. No, I'm kidding.
Listen, constructive criticism, as long as it's not rude, is fine and appreciated.
Like, be Heartland kind. Yes. Thank you.
Any story ideas, you know, I've gotten a few. We've gotten some messages about some different ones. I've had some friends text me. Because I kind of put out there, I'm trying to look for a South Dakota case now, so I kind of put it on my Facebook. So I've gotten a few text messages.
My family sent me a couple also for South Dakota, too, so I will send those to you.
Okay, fantastic. I've got a general idea, but I don't know if there'll be enough information for it right now. So yeah, send me whatever you got, because I'm like...
Yeah, girl, I got you.
I'm trying to figure out what I want to do here.
It's hard, because my next one...
I've sent you something, your next two.
For my next two. I have one for my one... Let's see. So, oh, my next one's Michigan. That's right. You did send me a Michigan
one. I sent you a few from Michigan, and I think I sent you one because we have it written out, and I don't remember what they are now, but I think I sent you for the one after that even.
Nebraska.
Is that the next one?
Yeah. I got a good one, I think, for that one, but we'll see.
There's a couple that I now have, too, for Nebraska. But yeah. So anyways, until next time.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.